All right, the Buddha's words on loving kindness. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature.
Let them not
do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, upwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Okay. So, we've all been facing the reality of change lately, that suddenly, in this last week, we had to come back to stop, to change the way we were doing things because of outward circumstances. And so, like as I've been saying these last few weeks, that if we look in our own heart and look after our mental states, then you know what happens in the external world, then we can be prepared for it. You know, if we
accidentally leave the iron on and come home and the house is burnt down, or we're driving along and we get a flat tire in a car, or we spill a cup of soup over our favorite book, or whatever it is. You know, there's always going to be something that we like or some circumstance that we have that we're attached to, and it changes. And so when we're not prepared for that change, when we, as Ajahn Chah would say, when we don't know that the cup already has a crack in it, then when the cup or the glass cracks and breaks, we suffer. Doesn't mean we shouldn't look after the cup or the glass. It just means that we, if we always see the crack in the cup and the glass, then we're always prepared that change, that things are transient, that change is inevitable. And the one certain thing in this life is that things change. And when we start to use the power of our peace and happiness of our meditation, then we can contemplate these things more fluidly without the mind getting upset or sad, and even prepare ourselves for when a loved one or even our own death, because death is a process of separation. And so if we're not prepared for separation, you know, it can be very difficult. I remember my mother ended up with brain damage when I was about 13. And then just seeing the suffering that caused my father, you know, he really suffered for a year. Even, and she lived in that state for about 10 years after that. And you know, my brother ended up as a Christian missionary and I ended up as a Buddhist monk. So I think there's just something to suffering that makes you look more deeply at life. And because if we always get everything that we want when we want it, then we're not going to be prepared for the suffering that can potentially come. And then the second thing is, then that's why we should try and live a good life. You know, whatever we do, we see it like skills that we can perfect. So we like, in one of the Buddha's past lives, he was a cartwright making you know, wheels for chariots. And he spent 6 months on one wheel that this king had asked him to make, and only 6 weeks on the other. And then when the king asked him, you know, well, why did he spend 6 months on one wheel? And then he showed him and he spun this wheel, and it was such a perfect wheel that even though it rolled, it wouldn't fall over. It was just like perfectly made. And then the other one that only took him 6 weeks to make, when he spun that wheel, it would, you know, roll along and then fall over. And so the idea is that whatever profession or whatever we're doing in life, we can learn to see things as skills, that we're perfecting our mind, that we're perfecting wholesome qualities. You know, we can become excellent dishwashers and excellent at cleaning toilets. And the thing is that usually our mind wants to be off in its own world and doesn't want to be here, doesn't want to be present. So one thing about learning things as a craftsman's skill, it's like one of the Buddha's similes for breath meditation is like the turning of a lathe. You know when it's a long turn, or you know when it's a short turn. And that's like when you know it's a long breath or you know it's a short breath. And the idea is, if you're turning wood, you have to be really present to what you're doing. Otherwise, you're going to, you know, destroy it. And so there's something really nice about the idea of craftsmanship. And when you can see, because with the craft, you can see a result at the end of it. And you can see that. So this... there was a family in the UK who've been doing you know, the royal chariots and stuff, the wheels for hundreds of years, their particular family. And one of them, he's been doing it for about 20 years now, and he said, well, in about 20 years, I should start to be good at it. Even though he's done it for 20 years and he's in the family of that, you know, he's got the idea that he's always improving himself, always looking at what the potential for putting his heart into his work. And then when we have that diligence and idea that, you know, excellence is possible, then our mind becomes interested in what we're doing, because it requires our total focus and attention. It's no longer, you can't be half-hearted and be excellent at something at the same time. And that's why I like meditation, because if you're only meditating half-heartedly, then well, I mean, first of all, it's a skill, so you get used to it. But once you're used to it and you know how to meditate, if the mind is just wandering off and doing its own things, there's many things that you can do to bring it back. And the Buddha would describe, I've mentioned it before, but there are like five ways of dealing with thoughts. And one is to substitute. So if we're meditating, I mean, usually you shouldn't try and change a meditation object more than once every 20 minutes or something, because it can lead to confusion. But if you're really trying and then it's not working, then you try and adapt how you're meditating. So if you were focusing on the longness and the shortness of the breath, then maybe you focus on the feeling. So you just make a slight alteration in how you're perceiving. So that's the process of substitution. Or if there's lots of anger arising in the mind and it's completely dominating the meditation, then trying to use the opposite, like bring up some thoughts of friendliness instead. And so meditation sometimes can be quite active. And then it goes on to the other four ways of dealing with thoughts. And the second one is seeing the danger. For example, so it's like if you meditate for half an hour or something, and you were just to think for the whole entire half an hour, then, you know, that could have been some time where we were developing some peace and some kindness. And so by contemplating the danger in wasting our time, we can encourage the mind to do the practice. And anyway, I've spoken about the five before. I can speak about them individually if anybody's interested. But the idea is that we have tools in our box. So we're not just blindly meditating, blindly practicing and hoping for the best, but we find the tools that work for us. And I think in Thai it's called skillful ubai, which is like ubayas, which is like skillful means. So it's like, I think that's why the Buddha, when he taught meditation, he was very broad, very unspecific, because the idea is that you've just got a very basic teaching given, and then it's up to us to apply our own minds to it and to see, you know, what works for us. And the actual process of meditation is a process of learning to overcome the five hindrances. And five hindrances are sense desire, ill will, restlessness and worry, sloth and torpor, and doubt. And then the opposite of them are known as the seven factors of awakening. And so actually anytime we're meditating, anytime our mind is gathered throughout the day in wholesome qualities, then actually even maybe unknowingly, we're developing the seven factors of enlightenment. Because when the mind is going into desire, going into aversion, into restlessness and worry, into sloth and torpor, into doubt, then that's just confusion and darkness. Where when the mind is in the other qualities of like joy and happiness and equanimity and mindfulness and investigation of truth, these kind of things, then the mind is bright. The mind is gathering. It's no longer being sent out into the world blindly. You know, you have awareness of what the mind is doing. And sometimes we may not have complete ability to direct the mind. So then we just use mindfulness to be aware of the mental state. So it could just be really strong irritation coming up. And then so if we can't overcome it, then we can just be aware of it. You know, we can just see, okay, there's this strong dislike arising at the mind. You know, here is the thought, here is the dislike, you know. And then you have this process of seeing that either the mind is either liking something or disliking it. So it's just this process of perception and reaction. And so that's another way. That's known as contemplating the ayatana, which is your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind. So, and I find that quite a useful tool to see that, you know, if my mind isn't particularly subtle, then noise can bring up aversion. And then so I have to go through this whole process of contemplating all of the six senses and seeing that. In certain Buddhism say you have the eye, you have sight or seeing, then you have eye consciousness. And then those three come together and that's called contact. And then from contact, perceptions arise. And from perceptions, there's either sukha vedana, which is feelings of happiness, dukkha vedana, feelings of suffering, or asukha adukkha vedana, which is feelings of neither happiness or suffering. And this happens at all of the six senses. And the point is that usually we're trying to attach to happiness. We're being averse to suffering, and we're ignorant. We're in confusion and ignorance when it comes to the middle one, which we would probably in English call neutrality. But in Buddhism, it's called neither happiness nor suffering. And so what we're learning to do as a precursor to meditation is called sense restraint. And sense restraint means that we learn restraint at the six senses. So whether it's seeing, healing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, or thoughts of the mind, that we learn not to react to them. So instead of liking and running after likes, instead of aversion running after dislikes, we learn to be equanimous. You know, if an ant wanted to bite me when I was meditating today, okay, ant, it can bite me. Just go about your way. I'm not going to be angry at you. And then it went about its way. And but if, you know, I'd reacted, then that would have been the end of my meditation. And so the idea is that you just, you know, see things in perspective. And when we have a time to meditate, then that's a time to try as much as we can to settle. And to see this process that, in the Christianity they have the centering prayer, and one lady in there had the simile that it's like a scuba diver at the base of the water, looking up, and there's boats going along. And so you know you've lost it in your meditation when you've gone up to the surface and you've climbed into the boat. And so our process in meditation isn't necessarily to get rid of thoughts, to get rid of contact, but it's just to be able to start to have this detachment from them, where we can be equanimous and peaceful. And you know, sometimes if we meditate for 20 minutes, we may have 18 minutes of agitation. But we have 2 minutes of peace, so that would still be called a success. So it's like, and it's like anything. It's like a little child who first goes to school, they can barely focus on what the teacher's saying, you know? And so it takes time for refinement and development to grow. So we can't expect, if we don't have a habit of meditation and peace, we can't expect for that to immediately happen. And I remember I meditated when I was young, at the age of 13, and I had very peaceful meditation. And then in my mid-20s, when I started meditating again, and I tried to meditate, it was really difficult because I had a lot of thoughts. I'd spent 15, 20 years filling my head with all kinds of thoughts since I was a kid. And so that was really interesting, that noticing that as a kid, I didn't have such strong attachments to my thoughts. So that's the other thing to realize, that we've just made train tracks in thinking. And so now we need to learn to make train tracks in peace, in tranquility, in silence. And one good way of doing that is to have time of the day or to have a day of the week where we specifically focus on silence and seclusion. But that's a day where we avoid people as much as possible, we avoid talking, and we focus more on just being peaceful. So we start to make that a priority. Because I've noticed when I do silent retreats, the good thing that happens when you're silent is that you're not getting yourself into any trouble. You know, you've only got your own mind to deal with now. You're not getting in any trouble with anybody else, because you're not... not getting any arguments with your husbands or wives. You're not, you're not accidentally saying the wrong thing. And so it's much easier for the mind to settle. And so it's like learning to make seclusion a friend. And then there's three kinds of seclusion as well that I've been taught. And the first seclusion is seclusion of the body. That's where we try to be like a what's the reverse side of a magnet called? The repelling effect. So that's when you're trying to get seclusion. And so every time you see a person or a busy situation, you just try and avoid it. So that's physical seclusion, or seclusion of the body. And then there is Chitta vivake, which is the vivake of the mind, seclusion of the mind. So that's where instead of the mind getting involved with anything, the mind is just bright and luminous. You're not worried about anything. And then all the thoughts and mental states are just like bubbles rising up around it. So you're literally not involved with whatever the stories or thoughts or emotions or anything that goes on in the mind. You just don't react or get involved with it. And then the last one is Upati Vivake, which I don't have a perfect translation for it, but I take it as, so that's like situational seclusion. So you don't worry about what you're going to eat tomorrow or if you're going to, you know, if you didn't get enough sleep, if you're going to get enough sleep tonight, and all those kind of mundane worries where the mind gets sent off thinking about this or that. And so when we put down all of these things, then that's seclusion. And the thing is that the world we live in is full of busyness, it's full of restlessness, it's full of agitation. And it really takes developing the skill of meditation to slowly, and I learned to like meditation. I remember one of my first meditation teachers telling me, I don't know if you've ever meditated with a ticking clock in the room, it can be really annoying. But the teacher pointed out to me, well, it's the first time in your life you've ever actually heard the clock tick before. You're being annoyed at it, but actually your mind is more subtle. You know, you're more quiet than you've ever been. you know, for this long period of time. And then I think he ran a retreat once where they had demolition going on next door. So if they can do that, so that kind of put me in perspective that, you know, a lot of it is our attitude and how we react to things. And as I was just saying to Gabriel earlier, that, you know, when you're on these retreats and having times of silence, sometimes you can get the wrong attitude, and then you find difficulty in the way that you're relating to your experience, and it becomes hard. And so the two main tools that I've learned, one was from my days where I used to do yoga, and one of my first spiritual teachers, it would be the idea of heart yoga, which is like yoking your heart to good mental qualities. So instead of physical yoga, you're doing yoga of the heart. So you're going to, you know, if you're making, it's lunchtime, okay, now's the time for heart yoga. I'm only going to have good qualities during this period. And I'm going to yoke myself to positive attitude. So I really like that idea, and I've used that in the past. And or Ajahn Brahm's idea of doing the 20 push-ups, you know, the smile push-ups, and actually doing it. You know, if you're a depressive person, it's a very stand in front of the mirror each day for 20 days and do your 20 push-ups, 20 smile push-ups. And I've actually done that on retreats and things. And the thing is, because you can get a little bit depressed or just get complacent in your attitude. So actually sometimes a physical thing like that, like the heart idea of the heart yoga, or the smiling a little bit more, it just puts you in a better mood. And when you're in a better mood, then you can often overcome that difficulty. And the other one is the gentleness and patience. And there's one teaching where the Sariputta, the right-hand disciple of the Buddha, he did this amazing teaching called Let's Chant Together, where they listed virtually all of the Buddha's teachings in brief, and this numerical teaching, that he had such wisdom and recollection abilities. And so, and I can barely even take in a tiny bit of it, but when I was reading through it once, in the twos, there was one line, because each line is a separate teaching, and one of the lines were gentleness and patience. So gentleness and patience is a complete teaching, and that's always stuck with me, because whenever things aren't going right, then it means gentleness and patience aren't there. The attitude is wrong. And so by just shifting and going, okay, well, how can I be more gentle right now? How can I open up and be more patient to this experience? You know, not fight it, welcome it, be with it. Because I've always had the idea, I know there's different ways of practicing, and some of them involve a lot of suffering. And, you know, they still lead in the right direction, but I always had the idea that, you know, I wanted to be, I didn't want to cause unnecessary difficulty to myself in my practice. So I always kept that as a tool. And then the last one is to not change your meditation object too often. So find skillful means. I think 20 minutes is a good period of time. If you want to try out a meditation object or a mantra, then you use it for a meditation, or ideally even for a week or something, and you see whether it's suitable to you. And the only thing outside that is when we contemplate. Now, sometimes it's useful to use the peace and the strength that we have in our mind to actually contemplate a truth, like we're talking about silence. So with that, we can do our guided meditation. good thing about learning to relax the body is it allows you to tune into peace. As the body relaxes, we come more into the present moment, and then the mind actually starts to relax as well. Actually, whatever we focus on, if we relax that, either the body or the mind will relax. Because we're so connected with our body, it's very useful to learn to relax the body. We just come into the present moment, the kind awareness. Start something different today. Start by relaxing the shoulders. All the tension in the shoulders. Across the shoulder blades, the upper arms. Elbows, lower arms, the wrists, the palms of the hands, the back of the hands, the fingertips. This is relaxation spreading through the shoulders, shoulder blades, the arms and the hands. Allowing yourself to be in a comfortable position. Position that's awake and alert, but comfortable and relaxed. Relax the toes and the feet, relax the ankles, inside out, relax the lower legs, spreading up from the ankles towards the knees. It's deep relaxation and peace. Relax the knees, bringing this kind awareness into the knees. Relaxation spreading up into the thighs, all the muscles, everything in the thighs, spreading up towards the hips. Relax the weight of the body onto the seat. Relax the waist. Relax the belly from inside out. Just become aware of the belly as it rises and falls. It's a natural process, arising and falling. Arising and falling. Relax the lower back, middle back, the upper back. Spreading peace and kindness through the whole of the back and the sides and round to the diaphragm and the solar plexus. Up into the chest, the lungs, and the heart. Just imagine for a moment the all tension dissolving around the heart. And inside the spiritual heart, there's a smiling, like a smile stretching across the blue sky. All the clouds are vanished. All difficulties dissolved. Relax the lungs. Just become aware of the lungs as they fill up and empty. It's a natural process of breathing. Sensitive to the in-breath, sensitive to the out-breath. If we can make the breath comfortable, it might be short that it's comfortable, or like a full deep breath might be comfortable. Just allow the breath, in breath and out breath, to become comfortable. Sensitive to an in breath. Filling up the lungs, sensitive to an out-breath, expelling from the lungs. Welcoming, allowing, being friends with. Whatever is okay just as it is. Sensitive to an in-breath, sensitive to an out-breath. Relax around the neck, all the muscles of the neck, inside the neck. Relax the chin, the jaw, the teeth, the tongue, down to the root, the lips, between the nostril and the upper lips, out into the cheeks, on the sides of the nostril, the nostrils, the ridge of the nose, the bags under the eyes. Allow all tension and tiredness in the bags of the eyes to begin to vanish. Relax the eyelids. Might notice a slight smile at the corners of the eyes as the eyes begin to relax deeply. Present to the feelings of the eyes. Front of the eyes, the middle of the eyes, the back of the eyes, top of the eyes, the bottom of the eyes, the whole of the eyes. Just relax. Bring this soft, kind awareness permeating the eyes. The eyes relax deeper and deeper. eyes of vision, eyes of peace. Relax the eyebrows, the temples. Allow all the lines of the forehead to begin to vanish. Any lingering tension or worry, just allow it, like bubbles of emptiness, to rise up and vanish. Any lingering tension on the forehead to dissolve. We can give up our concerns and worries, thoughts and restlessness. And come more fully into the present moment. Awakening to the present moment. Bring our attention to the mind or the heart, whatever you want to call it, the spiritual space of our experience. If the past is gone, let the past dissolve. Whatever we think about the past is irrelevant at the moment, and also it doesn't exist. The future hasn't yet happened yet. We can relinquish future and imagination, and even the external present is not our concern. We can just be content here in the present moment, our current experience. With this relaxed, awakened presence, just begin to be aware of an in-breath, begin to be aware of an out-breath. If you'd like a mantra for the meditation, and you could use kindness or some other word that you like, kind with the in-breath, ness with the out-breath, just some simple word that evokes a useful feeling. Otherwise, just tune into the feelings of an in-breath, feelings of an out-breath. Being okay with whatever one is experiencing. There may be thoughts with the stillness. We just remind ourselves to be awake and aware of one in-breath. Awake and aware of one out-breath. Sense of simplicity and contentment, just being here with the breath, like a dear friend. Thoughts and feelings are just like bubbles of emptiness rising up. Just stay with the luminous heart, Feelings of one in-breath, feelings of one out-breath. Relinquish all stories and thoughts of the mind. And if you're within a mantra, kind with the in-breath, yes with the out-breath, kindness, kindness. Allowing any difficulties or tensions to dissolve. Kindness. Kindness. Welcoming, allowing, being friends with. Gently and patiently attending to the in-breath. Gently and patiently attending to an out-breath. Content to be with one in-breath. Content to be with one out-breath. Kindness. With a bright heart, free from concern, kindness, kindness. Carefully attending to one in-breath. Carefully attending to one out-breath. Heart of kindness and peace. Kindness. Kindness. I'll be silent for the next 5 minutes. Stay with kindness. And the in-breath and out-breath, content things as they are. Kindness with the in-breath. Kindness with the out-breath. Content here in the present moment. May I be grateful for all the goodness in my life, all the good that I have done. Appreciative joy to myself. Joyful appreciation to myself. May there be a sense of celebration in our hearts for all the good we have done. We may experience and enjoy the results of that goodness. The heart be filled with appreciative joy. As the heart begins to overflow, I share this appreciative joy with all beings everywhere. May all beings enjoy the fruits of their good actions. Appreciative joy to all beings in the ambrosial. And just see how the heart is after half an hour of meditation. Is the mind more subtle? What's the mental state like? What were the things that worked so we can become skillful at meditation? May we take this peace and joy with us after this meditation. We can use it to be more mindful and kind going out into our lives. And when you're ready, may open your eyes. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly and indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss,
and lead us to death. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize the Bhana in every kind of birth. May I have upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may all darkness and delusion be dispelled.
Bhavatu sabba mangala rakkhantu sabba devata sabba purana bhavena sada suti bhavantu te bhavatu sabba mangala rakkhantu sabba devata sabba dhamma anupāvena sadā sutti bhavantu te bhavatu sabba mangala rakkhantu sabba devata sabba sangha anupāvena sadā sutti bhavantu te.
Thank you for coming.